Welcome back to the show, everybody. Got a great episode for you today. In this episode, I have four movie reviews. Technically, two of them are kind of lumped together into one review. But in order, my reviews will be Terrifier 1 and 2. After that, it'll be Weird, the Al Yankovic Story, and then Ticket to Paradise. So those are my reviews for today. Before I get into any of them, I do have to thank my sponsors.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it!
Alright, so 2016's Terrifier and 2022's Terrifier 2. Yes, I am outside. It's a little bit windy, so hopefully you guys can hear me alright. I did try to face the microphone away from where the wind was coming, but we'll see how that works out. Yeah, usually when it comes to movies, like a series of films, I try to make singular reviews for the singular movies, rather than reviewing them all in one go. But as for Terrifier 1 and 2, I just kind of wanted to put them both into one review, just to make it a little bit easier on me. Plus, I don't have as much to say about both films, and it'd probably be a little bit longer with both into one review, if that makes sense. But yeah, this is a very, very crazy series for sure. Let me actually look at some of my notes here. There was something I wanted to say. It's written and directed by Damien Leone. Hopefully that's how you say it. He wrote and directed the first and second one, and potentially third if they decide to make another one, which they definitely kept it open for. But yeah, he is the mastermind of this character. He's the one who created it. And Art the Clown is the slasher in this movie, which is actually a character that existed before the first Terrifier movie came out. Art the Clown showed up in short films by Damien Leone, but made his full debut in a film, an anthology film, called All Hallows Eve. So that's the first time Art the Clown as a character showed up, but then basically got his own movie in 2016 called Terrifier. The thing that's really interesting about both of these movies is that there are little to no visual, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like digital effects, like CGI or anything like that. Little to no CGI whatsoever. I'm pretty sure there's none at all in the first movie. Might be a little bit in the second. I'm not 100% sure, but for the most part, it's all practical effects, which is something a lot of movies, maybe not just horror movies, but a lot of movies in general these days do not do. And the 2016 film actually feels like a film that could have came out in the 90s with the film grading and whatnot. And then this one kind of a little bit similar. With the way that it's shot and the cameras that they use, it does almost feel like an older film. And with that aspect, as well as the practical effects aspect on top of that, it makes for a really interesting experience for me as a movie lover. It kind of takes you back to the classic slasher movies like, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, Scream, Halloween, all that kind of stuff. And it takes some slight inspirations from it with the music and the costume design and just some of the kills as well. The music in the movies, both movies, kind of sounds a little bit like the Halloween, not the theme, but the you know, theme that they have when Jamie Lee Curtis is like running away from Michael or anything like that. It kind of gives me those vibes there. And then with the costume, I mean, sure, people are gonna compare it to Pennywise, and basically the clown aspect is the only aspect about him that reminds me of Pennywise. And then he's silent, like Michael Myers, I guess you could say too, or Jason Voorhees. He's a mime clown, so he doesn't talk at all, which makes his character even more creepy. Honestly, I would say this is probably the creepiest slasher there is out there, in my opinion. I haven't seen every slasher movie, I haven't seen every franchise, so out of the ones that I have seen, Art the Clown is the one I'd probably be the most scared of. I mean, you have other slashers and stuff that have these kind of supernatural powers like Jason or even Michael at times, Freddy Krueger. But in the first film, at least, they keep it down to a level where this literally could just be some random guy. You know, it doesn't have to be some supernatural force. However, spoiler alert for the second one, and kind of towards the end of the first one, they do bring in supernatural elements with his character. And the second, and the first one is very slight, and it plays a big role while not being like a big part of the movie, I guess. Spoiler alert, comes towards the end, the whole supernatural element of it, which you can kind of try to piece together what might have happened there. But yeah, the second one in particular does bring in a lot more supernatural elements to it, that I didn't necessarily love, because I'm a big slasher movie fan, but the thing I love most is simplicity in slasher movies. That's why I love the original Halloween, why I love the original Scream. Well, honestly, most of the Scream movies stay relatively realistic, but especially Halloween, this, the sequel, felt like a Halloween movie that, you know, it's like one of the not-so-good sequels. I wouldn't say Terrifier 2 is a horrible movie, but the way that it plays out, it feels like one of those Halloween sequels where they're just throwing in anything at the wall and seeing what sticks. There's a lot of different ideas, not only in the first movie, but in the second movie as well, even more so in the second movie. And the thing I think the second movie has the biggest issue with is balancing all those different ideas. There's so many different things that they're doing in this movie, so many different elements to it, and yet none of them really seem to pay off a whole lot, except for a couple, which honestly didn't even seem that interesting to me, having to do with the main character of the second film. I don't know, it's a weird movie for sure. But that first one is definitely the one I would prefer to go back and watch. It's an hour and 25 minutes. It's a really short movie. You don't really learn a whole lot about the characters. There's a point in there where one of the characters calls her sister, and you're like, oh, well, she just has a sister now. That wasn't really explained before, not really mentioned. You don't really know anything about the characters in the first one, which is kind of a problem, because you don't really feel anything for the characters when they do inevitably die. But when it comes to the second one, they tried to add a lot more character to it for the characters that are in there, giving them a lot more backstory and just a lot more meat to the bone, I guess you could say. Wow. Yeah, that sounds pretty gross thinking about just what Art the Clown would do with that meat on the bone. But they try to give a little more depth to the characters in the sequel, which I very much appreciate. However, they at times just go too much. They dwell too much on the characters and like the things that they've dealt with, and they dwell too much on certain just certain things that they're doing with their night, I guess, like going to parties and stuff. There's elements in this sequel where they just hold on things for way too long. Like they show you, oh, her making her whole Halloween costume, which is cool, I like that, or oh, her going to get a drink, or oh, her doing this and this and this, and it's just like so many of these things don't feel fucking necessary whatsoever. I don't feel like I need to watch her like do her makeup or whatever it is that she's doing for one whole minute, because I mean, if you have one kind of long drawn out scene of something that doesn't really matter, that's one thing that lasts like a minute. But when you have so many of those long drawn out scenes that all add up to a minute, you know, that's a lot of minutes in your movie. I'd say about a half an hour of this movie could probably be cut out, just for, you know, simplicity and just for the sake of, you know, really not needing those scenes there. There's a lot of just redundant stuff, which even in the original Halloween movie, there's scenes that they hold on for too long that don't feel necessary, but it's fucking Halloween. It's Michael Myers. It's classic. But with this one, it's newer. They gotta do more interesting things to really keep people coming in. And I don't think that sequel really did a whole lot of that for me. If another sequel does come out, will I watch it? I don't really know if I'd be rushing back to watch it, to be honest. The first one was good. I'll give that one a 7 out of 10 while we're talking about it right now. By the way, let me talk about some of the actors here. We have Jenna Connell as Tara Hayes, Samantha Scafidi as Victoria Hayes, David Howard Thornton, he plays Art the Clown in both movies. Very fucking creepy. Great actor. Great job there. The actors, for the most part, in the first movie, they you could tell that they were the cheaper options. No offense to the actors at all, but are they the best actors? Not at all. Not even a little bit. However, in the second movie, let me grab my notes here for the second movie, we get, who is it, Lauren Larriva as Sienna in this movie. She's incredible. I want to see what she does next, because she had some moments in this movie that really freaking surprised me, especially towards the end there, but I don't know. the characters in here are good. In the second movie, for the most part, you like the characters, and then there's some that you're kind of meant to hate. But Sienna really does, she does stand out in this movie, surprisingly, for a slasher flick where you're, for the most part, not really caring about the main characters. One of my biggest issues with the first movie is that the main character in that film, she wasn't smart. She had certain aspects of her character that were smart, that she did smart things, but at other times she does completely stupid things and goes after sounds in the dark and shit like that, and I'm just like, that's stupid as fuck. With this character here, Sienna, there's a few added elements to it, such as like her kind of having dreams about Art the Clown and kind of knowing about it prior to what goes on in the movie. But with her, she seems to make a lot more smarter decisions. And that's the thing about these slasher movies, is that, think about it. In Halloween, you have Laurie Strode. She is a badass in that movie. You love Laurie Strode. Jamie Lee Curtis is fantastic. You have to have at least one character in your slasher movie that isn't a complete fucking idiot. And in the whole first movie, I was just like, is there not a single fucking competent person in this movie at all? So that kind of pissed me off about the first one. But at the same time, I do like the first one better. For the sequel, I think I'm going to go ahead and give that a 5 out of 10. It's not as crazy as I was expecting it to be. Maybe I was going in with higher expectations than I probably should have. But I don't know. It wasn't having me like throw up over the gore or anything like that. If anything, the first one really did more for me in terms of the gore than the sequel. Because in the sequel, you get so much of it. Whereas in the first one, you get kind of little, even though it's a short movie, you get kind of little glimmers of it throughout the film. And then when something crazy happens, which if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about, it just shocks you. But in this movie, you're kind of desensitized just because of the amount of gore and violence that's in it. And the thing I do want to say, the thing I was thinking about while watching the movie, is that gore doesn't make a horror movie. Like crazy gore, just the most violence, it doesn't make a good horror movie. It's the story that you put into it that makes a good horror movie. And would I say either of these films have a really great story? Not so much. But are they fun? Yes, they are. They are very much fun. They are very scary, surprisingly scary for somebody who doesn't really get scared by stuff. At least that first one, because the first one, like I said, doesn't really have any supernatural elements, so it feels the most real out of the two. It feels like the most plausible thing that could happen out of these two movies, but I don't know. Overall, are these films I'm going to be rushing back to rewatch? Not really. There's a lot of other horror movies I'd rather watch, a lot of other slasher movies I'd rather watch, but I can commend both of the films for doing what they're doing in terms of a filmmaking standpoint, where they are using those practical effects. They are using, like, you know, possibly older cameras to shoot on with a different film grain on it. It has a different quality to it that kind of makes it feel a little bit older, like you're watching maybe like an 80s or 90s slasher flick. For those reasons, I can really respect both movies. But just for the sake of like having gore, just for the sake of gore, it doesn't completely work, especially in the second one for me. And I hate to be kind of rambling a little bit, and I definitely am. I'm not really looking at my notes. This is mostly just for my mind. But the thing about the sequel is that it's like 2 hours and 13 minutes long. Has no fucking right to be. It drags so freaking much. I was so ready for it to be over. It has seemingly like 2 to 3 different endings because it just keeps going. And at a certain point, I was audibly in the theater with other people around me. I was just like, just freaking end the movie already. No disrespect to the director or writer or anything at all, but in a way, it kind of felt like you just didn't know when to end it. And I'm just like, just end it here. End it here, because at that point, you're getting to the fun. The end, the last 10-15 minutes is the fun. It's the violence, it's the craziness that you're looking forward to the entire time. It's the slasher going up against the main character of the film. The protagonist and the antagonist. And that's what you're looking forward to. But when it comes to like everything else in this movie that just seems really slow and drawn out and you just don't care about, really, it makes it not as fun when you get to the quote-unquote fun stuff of the film. It just makes it feel like, oh, I'm ready to go home because this movie is long as hell and not a whole lot has really happened, which is why I'm confused. I guess the first like maybe 5 minutes has a couple like really gory scenes, so maybe that's why people were freaking out just in the first like 5 minutes or so. But after a while, like after you get past that opening, it takes a while to really get going again. I think the slowness of this movie would have been better if they had a little bit more of a compelling story. Like I said, they had a lot of different ideas in this movie that I don't think they balanced well. There's a lot of things in this movie that aren't explained at all. It's messy, but I think it's going to make money, that's for sure. The theater I went to wasn't super packed, but that being said, I went on a Thursday, like right after people are getting out of work, so that doesn't really mean a whole lot. But I feel like a lot of people, because of the news about it alone, the things that they've heard about it, word of mouth alone is going to drive people to watch this movie if it hasn't already. I think it's going to do well enough to give the movie a third installment. Excuse me, hiccups. I think this one will do better in terms of box office. I don't know if the first one came out in theaters, actually. But in terms of box office for the sequel, I think it will end up being enough for another film. Like I said, not really going to be rushing back to watch the other ones when that comes out. Not really going to be rushing to watch that one when it comes out, if it comes out. But I do think this movie probably did make enough money to warrant another sequel. So we'll really have to wait and see what happens. Art the Clown is a character that I think is going to be one of the biggest slashers going forward. I think he's going to make a name for himself, and we'll really have to see where it all goes. If it goes anywhere else from here, which I have to imagine it will, but who knows. So there's my review for the first and second movie. I was going to try to go in order and talk about the first one first and then the second one second. But I just ended up kind of talking about both at the same time. So there you go. Have you seen Terrifier 1 or Terrifier 2? What did you think? Did you love it? Did you hate it? Are you in the middle? I appreciate it, but I don't love it. I wouldn't say I hate it, but that second movie just really dragged for me. It was so slow and dragged out and drawn out. I was very frustrated with that one for the most part, but there were a few good scenes in there. Have you not seen these films? Are you planning on watching them? Are you much of a horror movie fan? Because if you're not, I wouldn't recommend these. But if you're planning on watching them, let me know why or why not. And really just comment in general. I'd love to hear from you guys. Leave a like on the video, subscribe, hit that notification bell so you never miss an upload. And I should be back tomorrow with my review for another movie, which I'm not going to say what it is now because I might change my mind on what I'm watching, but we shall see. There's a few new ones that are out now, but see you later. All right, so 2022's Weird, the Al Yankovic Story is a Roku original movie, which means basically if you have a phone you can streaming services on, or if you have a streaming stick, even if you have Fire TV, if you don't have a Roku stick or whatever you want to call it, you can still download it on Fire TV and watch it. That's how I did it. So it's free to watch with ads. I don't know if there's like a premium version where you don't have to watch the ads, but maybe you get that if you actually have a Roku streaming stick. But yeah, I had to suffer through the ads, especially towards the end there. I had about 4 30-second ads, which 2 minutes, man. I mean, it's one thing if it's a show, but when it's a movie, ads are really, really frustrating. Also, there's these stupid flies flying around right now. There's like two of them in my room just annoying the hell out of me. Also it's really windy right now. It's only like 7 mph winds. That's not really that fast, but it sounds really loud on my window. So just an explanation on what that background noise is. This movie is directed by Eric Apple and written by Eric Apple as well as Weird Al Yankovic. And at times you can kind of tell it's written by two different people, which I'll get into in a bit here. But I do want to talk about the cast, of course. We have Daniel Radcliffe playing Weird Al Yankovic. When it comes to actors portraying musicians and other famous people, Daniel Radcliffe doesn't necessarily stand out above the rest for me in terms of his portrayal of the character or the person that he is trying to portray. But at the same time, this movie separates itself so much from reality and what actually goes down, like the actual history of Weird Al and like the things that happened to and around him and the people around him. It changes a lot of that. I looked a lot of it up during the movie. I'm just like, did this really happen? Did this really happen? Not going to get into too many details, but one specific little example is the fact that Weird Al comes with the song, comes up with the weird, I can't talk right now apparently, it's really late, it's like 3 a.m., I'm sorry, I'm definitely going to bed right after this, I wrapped up the movie a little late, but yeah, he comes up with the song Eat It, and at the time, at least in the movie, that was an original song of his, and then Michael Jackson comes out with Beat It, and I looked it up, and Beat It definitely came out first. What else can I mention here that isn't a huge spoiler? The whole Madonna thing, you actually see that in the trailer. They never actually really dated, according to Weird Al. It was like a platonic friendship, so definitely a lot of stuff in here that was changed from what actually happened. And they do some kind of Tarantino stuff. If you haven't seen a Tarantino movie like Inglourious Bastards or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, they kind of change, or Quentin Tarantino kind of changes around history from what really happened. In this movie, it is a Quentin Tarantino movie doing that times 10. There's moments in here where Weird Al is literally John Wick and is killing people. It literally almost turns into like a Predator movie at one point. By the end there, it kind of turns into a horror movie just a little bit. There's so many different tones and so many different movies inside of this one movie. It very much is a parody movie. So I actually think I wrote something down about that just to, keep going with that point. Maybe not, I don't know. But yeah, so very much a parody movie. When I think of parody movies, I think of like Scary Movie or something like that. And a lot of the time I do not like those types of parody movies. With this, it does it pretty well. There's still really wacky moments and things that just kind of happen. And when it comes to parody movies, I really hate that shit where they're just like doing random shit just to be like shocking or funny or just crude. In this movie, they have a little bit of that, but I think they do it well. They make it fun and they don't make it just completely random. There's times where some of the random and weirdness of this movie is just kind of happens, and I'm like, eh, I didn't really love that. There's one scene in particular involving David Desmalchian, or David Desmalchian, I believe is how you say his last name, playing John Deacon from Queen. And, man, I kind of wish I didn't give away that little detail there, the little cameo, but there's a lot of other cameos in this movie for sure from other actors that I won't spoil, but there's a scene in there, and I forget exactly what happened after that made me not like it as much, because I had a big smile on my face when John Deacon came in, and it was David Desmalchian. I was like, oh my god, that's awesome. He's like, I'm John Deacon, and everybody around him was like, who? And I thought that was funny, and then I forget exactly what it was, so forgive me, but there's something that happened after that where my smile just kind of started to fade just a little bit, and I was like, eh, I don't like what they did towards the end of that scene there, but oh well, it's fine. Doesn't really bother me too much. Obviously, I can't remember, so it's not that big of a deal, but there are times in here where it just gets a little too weird for me, but it fits for the movie that's in for sure. But let me look at the beginning of my notes here. Small cameo in the very beginning from Lin-Manuel Miranda. That's the only cameo I'm going to mention here. Well, actually, I have to mention the Weird Al cameo as well. Less of a cameo and a little bit more of a character. Plays kind of like a record producer or something like that. Record label producer, you know what I mean. So it's cool to see Weird Al in this movie as a different character aside from the one, you know, he should be playing, which is himself. But I like how they have Daniel Radcliffe come in here and kind of play a bit of a younger version of him. But yeah, also in the cast, I forgot to mention more of the cast here. We have Evan Rachel Wood as Madonna. Evan Rachel Wood is somebody you might know from the show Westworld. Which I believe I watched like the first season, maybe season and a half. I don't know if I've seen her in anything else, but she is good in that show, which I heard it's actually getting canceled, unfortunately. Well, let me see who else we have here. Julianne Nicholson as Mary Yankovic. There's a funny thing they do with her character in this film where there's a big time gap between Al seeing his mother and, you know, as a younger kid, and then seeing her as an adult many years later, and she's fatter. They address it in the movie. She has like a big, I don't even know how to describe it, just like, you know what I mean. And the funny thing about that, and I forget the actress who played her, I think it was the one who plays Claire in Jurassic World, either that or the one, it's either Juliet, no, it's not Julianne Moore. I'm mixing up names here. Shoot, what is her name? I always get actresses mixed up, these two actresses. But it's the one who plays the main girl in Jurassic World. I think she was in Rocket Man. Yeah, it was her. She was in Rocket Man playing, and sorry, that took way too long to get to the point, but she was in Rocket Man, played the mother to Elton John, and you see her kind of in her older age, and they do a similar thing where, you know, you can see that she gets fatter and the prosthetics look really weird on her. And in this movie, the prosthetics look weird too, and I'm just thinking the whole time, I'm like, oh my God, they're literally doing the thing that they did in the Rocket Man movie. I thought that was hilarious. I love the little, like, small parody things that if you haven't seen those other movies, you might not pick up on it. But for me, who watches a lot of these biopics, I thought that was really hilarious. But, hiccups, excuse me. We have Toby Huss as Nick Yankovic, the father to Al Yankovic in the movie. And his character's definitely an asshole, but at the same time, I kind of like Toby Huss, especially his character in Halloween Kills, or not Kills, but Halloween 2018, and there's a scene in there where he's like, I got peanut butter on my dick or some shit like that. It was just, that's shit like that I remember about certain actors. He was funny in that. I'm sure he's been in a lot of other stuff, I just haven't really seen anything else. But Rainn Wilson is also in this movie as Dr. Demento. At times, his character just feels like Dwight from The Office. But nevertheless, it's good to see Rainn Wilson getting more stuff to do, I guess. We have Will Forte as Ben Scotty and Weird Al Yankovic as Tony Scotty, which I'm guessing those are brothers in the film. Will Forte is hilarious. I love him. He's a great comedic actor. And let's get into some of these. I'm not going to get into all of them. I don't know. Do I want to get into all of them? You know what, I'm going to not mention the cameos in here and leave that for you guys for the movie if you do decide to watch it, if you haven't already watched it already. So let's just end it there. That's enough of the cast. Oh my God, there's so many crazy cameos and characters that show up in this movie. It's insane. But this is a Funny or Die production, which if you don't know what Funny or Die is, I don't know the exact origin of it, but I remember seeing a lot of YouTube videos by Funny or Die growing up on YouTube. It was on there relatively early, you know, when it was made or whatever. So I thought that was interesting, just something I wrote down there. I was like, huh, I didn't know they made movies or produced movies. But yeah, there are ads. I said confirmed there are ads in this movie. Immediately, first like 10 minutes in, I was just like, all right, I'm having fun. It's a funny, really funny movie. I'd recommend it just for the comedy alone. There's so many random and hilarious things that happen in there, and just so many lines in there that just kill me. They fucking kill me. They're hilarious. There's one in particular where the mom is like, and I think they said it in the trailer, but it's still so funny. She's just like, your father and I think it's for the best that you, like, and I'm paraphrasing, but, like, give up on your dreams and stop doing what you like. I'm just like, oh my God, yeah, that's a great line there. I love that one. But there's so many fucking funny lines in this movie, and so many funny things that happen.
so many crazy things that happen that when you start to realize what's happening, you're like, oh my fucking God, what are they doing right now? And when you think it can't get any crazier, it does. But Daniel Radcliffe, I do think, does a really great job in this role. Do I completely buy him as Weird Al? Not fully, but do I only see Harry Potter when I see him in this role? Not at all. In fact, far from it. A lot of people with actors like that that grew up playing iconic roles or have played iconic roles in the past and haven't done as much since, oftentimes just see that one character that they played. For this here, I didn't see a hint of Harry Potter, even with the glasses, you know. So I can appreciate that from him. I think he's a great actor. I haven't seen a whole lot of what he's done outside of Harry Potter, but there's one in particular called Horns that I do want to check out. Comment down below if you've seen that and tell me if it's a good one and if I should check it out and review it. But yeah, let me see here. A slight problem with all the parody aspects in this film is that you never know when the film is being genuine about actual things that happened to Weird Al. So pretty much everything in this movie, you kind of feel like you have to take with a grain of salt. And that's one kind of problem when it comes to comedy movies in general, or like, you know, sitcoms or anything with comedy. Mainly with shows, not like stand-up or anything like that, but mainly with shows is, I don't like when a comedy is just a straight-up comedy and doesn't have any genuine moments of just pure humanity. Like, I like to have those pure moments. And in this movie, they don't do that for a while, but then when you get towards the end, there are some more heartfelt moments that actually did quite touch me, didn't make me cry or anything, but, and plus I'm an easy crier, so nothing that, like, drew or tugged on the heartstrings too hard, but, yeah, for the most part in this movie, a lot of it's just, it's hard to take, well, I wouldn't say it's hard to take it seriously because you're not really supposed to take it seriously. There's even a little clip they play right before the movie where Weird Al himself, not as Daniel Radcliffe as Weird Al, but actual Weird Al comes on the screen and says, hey, this is a movie and it's all definitely true. He's basically like giving a, you know, little hint, hint, nod, nod, wink, wink kind of thing, saying most of this is probably false. And looking it up during the movie, most of this is false. And I think I might have mentioned that before, but the whole Madonna being the girlfriend thing, not actually real. There's moments in here where he literally becomes an action movie hero, not real, obviously. So yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff that happens. And also they do stuff with time periods where I'm just like, was Weird Al even like doing anything at this time? Would he even be interacting with these characters? And at the end of the movie in the credits, they start showing like pictures of Weird Al, the real Weird Al, you know, him growing up and whatnot, and, you know, different pictures of him. And then they show moments of him with like the Beatles and Elvis and stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, he never met the Beatles or Elvis. But yeah, I mean, it's a funny thing and a really fun thing about this movie that most of it is probably just completely made up. But at the same time, it's hard to take things like, you know what I mean? I already said not to take things seriously with this movie, but at the same time, it's hard to know. I mean, you guys know what I mean at this point. I just can't really explain what I mean. In fact, while watching this movie, I knew that there was something kind of holding me back, and I just didn't really know what it was. But overall, not a bad film. I think there's a lot more they probably could have done with it, but it's a crazy one for sure. Is it going to be on my top 10 of this year? Not at all. Is it going to be on my top 10 worst? Not at all. It's just kind of one of those movies that I watch, enjoy, and don't really feel any huge desire to go back to. But I appreciate the filmmakers here and the writers and Weird Al for bringing such a fun story to the screen and making it available to people and not making them have to pay for it. So I think that is very cool. Daniel Radcliffe, great job. I think he had a lot of fun with this role for sure. In fact, everybody in this movie seemed like they were having a lot of fun. And at the end of the end, I can't talk. It's super late. Again, forgive me. At the end of the day, That's what this movie really is supposed to be. It's supposed to be weird. It's supposed to be funny. It's supposed to be fun. And I think they delivered on all of that. So overall, I think I'm going to give this movie a 7 out of 10. Yeah, 7 out of 10 seems fair. That's what I give a lot of movies these days. That 7 out of 10 is kind of like my point where I'm like, all right, the movie is good. It's fun. It does what it needs to do. But it doesn't, like, completely blow me away. So, 7 seems fair. But have you seen Weird, the Al Yankovic story? What did you think? Did you love it? Did you hate it? Are you in the middle? I definitely enjoyed it, but I didn't love it by any means. And have you not seen this movie? Are you planning on watching it? Why or why not? I'd love to know. Comment down below. Really, anything you want to talk about in the comments down below, I'd just love to hear from you guys. Leave a like on the video, subscribe, hit that notification bell so you never miss an upload, and I should be back in the next video to review Ticket to Paradise. See you later. Alright, so 2022's Ticket to Paradise is directed by Ole Parker, written by Ole Parker and Daniel Pipsky, stars George Clooney and Julia Roberts as David and Georgia Cotton, who are a divorced couple who find out that their daughter Lily, played by Caitlin Dever, is getting engaged to a guy named Gide in Bali, Gide being played by Maxime Boutier. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Also in the cast here, we have Billy Lord as Ren Butler, the best friend to Lily. And that actress is actually the daughter to Carrie Fisher, who a lot of people know as Princess Leia. And yeah, I've seen her in some stuff. She was in one season of American Horror Story, which I never finished that season, but I thought she was pretty good in there. Definitely held her own. And then since then, I feel like I've seen her in a lot of comedies and really nothing else. The last thing I can think of that I've seen her in was Booksmart from 2019, directed by Olivia Wilde, I believe. And she actually starred in that with Caitlin Dever as well. I wouldn't say Billy Lord was like the star of it, but she was in the cast and played a pretty prominent role. But that was a really funny movie. And seeing them together in here, I thought that was really fun. But yeah, for the most part, her character is just kind of the one that likes to party and get drunk, so a lot like her character in Booksmart, but she has her moments, like a lot of people in this cast, actually. But the real main cast here is Maxime Boutier as Gide, George Clooney, obviously, Julia Roberts, Caitlin Dever, and Billy Lord. Everybody else is just kind of off to the side a little bit. It's mainly focusing on the divorced couple here, focusing on the new couple, and then a little bit on the friend, but she's just more off to the side too, I guess you could say. But Lucas Bravo in here plays Paul, which is the boyfriend to Georgia Cotton in this film, and I believe he's French. He's a very annoying character. I can't stand him at all. For the most part, he seems like a nice guy, but he just annoys the hell out of me in this movie for sure. But yeah, basically, you have Georgia and David finding out that their daughter is engaged after just meeting this guy. So they head over to Bali for the wedding, and they plan to sabotage the wedding and split them up. Basically, the way they explained it is Trojan horse style. So coming in, pretending like they're completely fine with it and sabotaging things in the background. At times, it makes their characters seem super petty and just awful, especially with David. It seems like a lot of the bad stuff that people do in this movie really comes a lot from him, in terms of, like, you know, the main couple sabotaging the wedding and whatnot. It seems like a lot of the really bad stuff came from him mostly. You know, there were times where he was talking to Gide about how their marriage wouldn't last. And honestly, he was just projecting his own feelings on him, if we're being completely honest there. But you can kind of see where the parents are coming from here. Because yes, you know, Lily just met this guy and they're already engaged. Yes, she's in a different country. Yes, she's still young. She just got out of college. She's about to become a lawyer. And that's basically throwing all that away. And also from their own experience, they know that typically stuff like this doesn't end well. So for all those reasons, you can kind of understand where they're coming from. But for all those reasons, also, like, their own experiences, you can tell that it's just all because of their experiences that they're so against her daughter being, their daughter being happy, really. And over the film, they learn and adapt and change and become better people. And, you know, it's very predictable. This is a very predictable movie, extremely predictable. In fact, when I saw the trailer, I knew exactly what kind of movie this would be. And pretty much everything I thought would happen did happen. But sometimes those types of movies aren't always bad. And I did have a lot of fun with this one. Is it the funniest movie I've seen this year? I don't think so. But there were a few moments in there that really did make me laugh. Again, with George Clooney's character, there's a lot of moments with him particularly, even though he is the one that kind of says the more hurtful shit towards Gide, I will say. And at first, with Gide, I was like, I don't know about this guy, you know, they just met, there's some kind of sketchy shit about him, I don't know, maybe not sketchy shit, but I was just like, I don't know, we don't know this guy, you know, there might be a big twist, and he might be like, I don't know, running a drug ring or something like that out of Bali, like, who knows, but it isn't that crazy of a movie. This isn't The Lost City with Sandra Bullock or anything like that. Like, it's a very simple story, and it's something that it feels like it's been done before so many times, but in here, it's made better because of Julia Roberts and George Clooney. I think Caitlin Dever is also really good in this movie. Everybody in this movie does a really good job, but obviously George Clooney and Julia Roberts are the big standout here, because with such a simple movie like this, like, it's such a typical romantic comedy kind of movie. It's really typical. But having these two all-star actors who not only have worked together before, but just have really great chemistry on screen. Amazing chemistry. Like, they're fantastic in this movie. Which, if I'm remembering correctly, weren't they technically siblings in the Ocean's movies? Yeah, that's a little sus, but no. But yeah, I really did like George Clooney and Julia Roberts in this movie. Both of them had sequences in this movie where they were just talking, and they didn't cut. It wasn't trying to be like, all right, now onto the next scene. Like, they gave them a solid, like, minute and a half to, like, say a full thing and tell a story. One moment with George Clooney kind of telling Billy Lord's character about how everything went down with his house and his marriage and all that, and kind of what led him to where he is. And that was a really amazing scene. Like, it had really great writing in that scene, which makes me wonder, like, which writer kind of wrote those scenes, because a lot of this movie is the very predictable type of rom-com that you come to expect. But there's aspects in here that are really surprising for a movie like this, where you do have those two main characters giving really great monologues, one of which with Julia Roberts actually brought me to tears. In fact, I'm not too manly to say this. This movie did make me cry. A lot of movies do, typically. Which is why I'm worried to watch Black Panther 2, because I feel like I'm going to be a wreck, but still going to see that for sure. But yeah, this movie did, like, tug at the heartstrings a little bit, for me at least, with certain moments. I don't want to get into, like, too many details for the people that haven't watched it, but just mainly towards the end, there's certain things that happen that really made me tear up and made me emotional. For the most part, you know, I guess this is a bit of a spoiler to say, but, you know, this isn't a Marvel movie. Spoilers aren't a huge deal, but happy moments, happy tears. So it's heartfelt, kind of fun, and, I mean, it's good for what it is. It's not a bad movie at all, and it's not, like, a great movie, not the best movie I've seen all year, but, you know, it has a blooper reel at the end, in the credits. That's the kind of movie this is. But like I said before, it does have those surprising couple of monologues from the two main characters that kind of separates it from other types of rom-coms like this. Because this movie does follow a formula, but it mixes it up a little bit, and I think it does it pretty well. So there you go. Not a super long review, but I wasn't expecting a super long review for this movie. There's only so much you can say about rom-coms and comedies in general with a simple plot like this, but still a fun movie. I would recommend checking it out. Maybe not, you know, $9 ticket checking it out at the movie theater or anything like that, wait for it to come on streaming. But if you're really dying to see it, go ahead, watch it in theater. I think it'll be a fun experience either way. It's a fun movie. And especially after Halloween for me, like watching all those horror movies and then me having posted my Terrifier reviews and watched that recently, I'm just like, I need something to laugh at. Weird Al didn't quite do it for me, but this one, I think, gave me that simple plot and just simple humor and just kind of tugged at the heartstrings a little bit in a few moments, and it did enough to kind of get me out of that scary time. But I still love horror movies, so it's nothing, but kind of got me out of the spooky season and also made me a little less paranoid and making me not want to look over my shoulder for a Michael Myers. So, yeah, fun movie overall, definitely. I think overall I would give this a 7 out of 10, which honestly, if you watched any of my reviews, you'll know that I give most movies a 7 out of 10. It's kind of my middle ground for a movie that's not groundbreaking, but still fun and enjoyable. So that's what I would give this movie. Am I going to be rushing back to watch this? No. Am I going to watch this movie again? Possibly, but with the amount of movies I watch, and I try to watch new things pretty much every time I watch a movie or show, it's very rare that I rewatch stuff. And if I do, this is probably not the type of movie I'd rewatch. But hey, that's just my opinion. Have you seen Ticket to Paradise? Did you love it? Did you hate it? Are you in the middle? I'd love to know. Comment down below. Have you not seen it? Are you planning on watching it in the theater or waiting on streaming? Tell me why or why not. I'd love to know that as well. Really comment down below with anything. And if you have a recommendation for a movie or TV show you want me to do a review for, I'll try to get to it. I recommend recommending me movies more than TV shows, because movies are less commitment. So if there's a movie out there that you want me to watch and I think that I could fit it into, I wouldn't say I have a tight schedule or anything like that, but there's a lot of movies that come out and a lot of TV shows that I try to catch up on. So if I can fit into my schedule and watch it and put a review out for it, and if it, I feel like it's something that'll do relatively well on the channel, then most likely I'll probably do that. But I don't mean to sound picky, but at the same time, if I'm going to watch a movie and put it out on the channel, I want it to try to do a little bit well. So it makes sense, right? But thank you all for watching. Leave a like on the video, comment as I said before, subscribe, hit that notification bell so you never miss an upload, and I'll be back in the next video to review a movie or TV show. Not sure which one yet. I might be going to the movies tomorrow as of recording this, so who knows. But yeah, thanks for watching. I'll see you in the next one. And that is the end of the show. Thank you all so much for listening. I should be back in the next episode for, I don't know if my next episode will be, most likely my Black Panther 2 review. And I'm guessing that that review will be its own episode, because I'll have a lot for that. I'll most likely make 3 different videos for it, one of which being like an initial reaction right after seeing the movie. Then it'll be a non-spoiler review, then a spoiler review. So 3 videos out of that, and then it'll be like 3 segments in the podcast form. So yeah, that'll probably be the next thing, but also in the works, after that Black Panther review, it'll be my reviews for the Santa Claus films, because the Santa Clauses comes out on the 16th, which I believe is a Wednesday. I believe it's like a 2-episode premiere, so I'm probably gonna watch the Santa Claus films within the next few days or so. I also want to rewatch the first Black Panther movie and do a review on that. So yeah, there's a lot for me to watch. I have a lot prepared. So that Black Panther, original Black Panther, like first film, that review will probably be put into the Black Panther 2 review episode. So yeah, it'll probably be a pretty long episode, I'm imagining. I'm sure I'll have a lot to say about it. I'm very excited to see it. So that's really the big thing right now. As of recording this, today is Sunday. I'm debating on going to the movies today. But that being said, I do have other things I could be watching, so I don't know. I want to see Till. That's one I want to see. I didn't see it the other night because I was like, you know what? After Halloween, I had so much gore and violence and scary shit. I just need a comedy. And, you know, Ticket to Paradise was a good one for that. Terrifier, I was like, kind of almost not in the mood for another scary movie. So maybe that kind of hurt my opinions on it a little bit, but I don't know. Also, the end of the episode is always long for me, of these podcast episodes. I always just ramble on and say whatever I want and talk about what I have going on, but yeah, this is for the people that actually stick around and listen to the whole episode. I appreciate you. This is me just rambling about random shit, but yeah, I mean, lots of good stuff coming out soon. Enola Holmes, the sequel came out. Probably not going to watch that, to be honest, because me being the way I am, I'm going to want to do a review and watch the first one first, and I really don't even want to watch the first one, so probably not going to do that. But if I'm really, really struggling to find content, then maybe I will, but I don't think I'm currently struggling at the moment. I have plenty of stuff I can do. But yeah, I think I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. For those of you who are still listening, I'm on Instagram at The Film Punch. I'm on Facebook at The Film Punch. I am on YouTube at The Film Punch. And yeah, link in the bio of my Instagram should give you links to my TeePublic store. And also, I mean, you're already listening to the podcast, but links to my Spotify, or where to listen on Spotify, where to listen on Apple Podcasts. You can find all that there. You can also find it, at least like the TeePublic link and the Instagram and Facebook links, on my YouTube channel as well, which all my socials now is at The Film Punch. So that's very, very convenient, very easy to tell people. Just be like Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, at The Film Punch. Finally passed 100 subscribers on YouTube. And, excuse me, they don't do custom URLs anymore, I guess. They do handles. So that's what that is now. So, yeah, there you go. Like I said, I'm going to wrap this up now. But yeah, thank you all for listening, especially the people that are still listening right now. And I will see you in the next one, where I should be reviewing the first Black Panther and Black Panther Wakanda Forever. See you in the next one.